that whole Bridges of Meaning Paul Vanderclay live stream, I was just in the live chat, and I was just talking to that one guy who is like super atheist, and I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I feel like we share the same position, but because you're being so hostile and aggressive and defensive, I now have to argue against you and advocate for the position that I don't actually believe in.
Yeah.
It's a weird position to find yourself in.
Yeah, wasn't he saying that he could convince Paul that there was no God or something? If he could just sit down and have coffee with him?
Yeah. There is no way. He seems like an intellectual, a guy like I could actually convince. I'm like, this guy's a pastor.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty set in his beliefs at this point in time.
Yeah, I'd wager even if you like dropped acid with him, he would probably not be changing his beliefs.
Yeah. But it's also hard to explain why not, right? Because it's like,
why he wouldn't give up being a Christian?
It's hard to explain like the Christian position, because the atheist in the chat was like, Paul Vanderclay just said he's skeptic about the existence of atheists. I'm an atheist, therefore Paul is wrong. But he wasn't just, like, that wasn't what he was saying. You have to put that through a little translation filter. You know what I mean? So I was trying to, like, actually explain to him what Paul was trying to convey. Like, you can't... It reminds me a lot of the... that one Akira wave, David Foster Wallace with his concession speech wave, where he's like, in modern day life, there's no such thing as atheists. It's every human being worships. It's just a matter of what to worship. Are you going to worship some god, that some formulation of a god, or are you going to worship like your own intellectual ability, money and fame, pride, this and that, you know? There's lots of things that can fill that void, and I was trying to explain, like, yeah, atheists don't believe in the God of the Bible. I don't think anybody's trying to make that point at all. That's not what Paul said. It's just like, oh, atheists just, they know God exists. They just pretend that he doesn't. I don't think that's the argument. I think the argument is that you can't go through day-to-day life as an adult without something at the top of the hierarchy, whether you acknowledge it or not. And if there's multiple things sharing that top spot in the hierarchy, then you're effectively a pagan or polytheist, however you want to use that term.
Yeah, I think he was saying that there is no top of the hierarchy, or you shouldn't have a top of the hierarchy, and everything is like some kind of interconnected matrix, but then it's like, well, how do you make a decision if you don't know which is like the right direction that you're going?
Exactly.
It was a bit confusing.
I really think that just came out of, like, that reaction was just like, it was just that, it was just purely reactionary, where he just hadn't heard that argument before and just said, no, there is no hierarchy. I'm like, oh, so what does that mean for you?
what's your
day-to-day life look like?
Yeah, your structural pyramid, or maybe they don't have one.
I really feel like I was talking to like someone who held my position from, you know, years ago. Like, I was talking to someone
like your old self.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
weird.
I'm feeling like I'm arguing with past Scotsley here. And it's interesting. It's enlightening, because like this guy is saying a lot of the same things that I would have said in a similar like setting, right? But Yeah, it's hard to make sense of it all. You can't really say, well, I know exactly what he means by that by just the one or two lines he said in a scrolling YouTube live chat. So
Yeah, it was definitely the bridges of meaning. Like that was the first time I had tuned into that one, but like the question and answer format, I liked it. I'd probably tune in again.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them. It's not like every week I go in and see what he's up to, but
Does he do those every week?
I don't think it's every week. I think he mentioned that like the next one's gonna be in like 2 weeks from now or something like that.
But on Fridays?
Yeah, they're always on Fridays. I guess he does them every 2 weeks now. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was a good experience for like even for an atheist like myself to just get a little bit more of an insider perspective on, what people of the church think. And like the one part that atheist guy in the chat got really upset when Paul started talking about the subject of, homosexuality and gay marriage and all that. And
Yeah, I didn't understand why he was getting upset.
yeah, like
Like
honestly,
Paul saying anything really that controversial that I could
no,
tell.
he was talking about like the actual issues underneath the issues. Like he didn't say anything inflammatory, and I'm allergic to bigotry. Like I have no time for anybody saying like racist and homophobic nonsense on the internet. It's just like, why
Yeah.
waste your time on any of that? That's not something you're going to be able to change my mind on. But hearing Paul's takes on like just the overall belief of this community and like being on a board of people that hold these beliefs, it's like I don't know. It's there needs to be a way to communicate with each other, and I don't know how to do that. Like I just admitted, I don't have time for anybody honestly making those claims. Paul, on the other hand, he seems like he's dedicated to making time for the most difficult of conversations. Like I don't know how to win over like somebody who doesn't believe that homosexuals should be married or whatever, should be together, whatever the current argument in the zeitgeist is. I'm Canadian. We gave up this conversation a long time ago. But yeah, I really think that it's pretty courageous of Paul to be a spokesperson in a setting where like so many people think it's just wholesale wrong. And he's like, so this is an issue in our community. Not very many people want to talk about it, so let's try to start the uncomfortable conversation here and see where that takes us. Get all of our air out all our dirty laundry, let's see what let's actually get down to the bottom of this, because there's people that actually just take the scripture for the word and say, well, the Bible says homosexuality is wrong, so that homosexuality is wrong. But like this isn't really a conversation that I'm qualified to have, but I feel like anybody else in my position feels like anybody having that conversation is just automatically a bigot and a homophobe and should just keep their mouth closed. And that's where I'm like, free speech is a little bit more important. There's no actual oppression going on in our conversation, so let's have the conversation. So what
Yeah,
did you think
everything
about
I've
that?
heard from Paul, he's on the up and up. He's good. I've been talking to the guys in that Discord server a little bit too. They're pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
I haven't seen that one individual that we were talking about, but
Yeah.
yeah.
We won't give any names. It was just like some guy who was on YouTube, so I think he's part of the community on YouTube, just not in the Discord. The real fans are in the Discord.
Right on. Yeah. No, they. I think it'll be insightful to talk to some of those people, considering we're trying to go through the Bible. So,
absolutely.
I was talking to them, those guys about the like the Mountain of Olives and Jesus in the garden and stuff we haven't even gotten to.
Right. We haven't even gotten to the New Testament yet, and that's what all these guys are excited about. So, I mean,
yeah,
it takes some time.
Yeah, I'm always impressed at how excited Christians can get, like, over the New Testament and the Word and everything. I mean, it's cool to see somebody optimistic like that about something.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. I'm kind of like, it's hard to describe my view of Christianity, because it's like, I don't want to say anything rude, but I'm kind of like jealous of the ability to believe that, because it's like,
yeah, I know what you're saying. Like you were just a few minutes ago talking about like yourself 10 years ago or whatever. And yeah. I would say I was the same way. I had the same beliefs, like, oh, these Christian scum, they're all the same. Yeah. And you just like tossing out the baby with the bathwater. You know, there's a lot of good people out there. They don't try to like push their beliefs on you.
Yeah, I was scrolling Facebook, and you know, like those things that pop up, like, hey, you have memories, remember 6 years ago or 8 years ago on this day when you shared this Sam Harris quote and you thought you were so clever. It's like, oh man, that's so cringe. But what can you do? Like, really, it takes the exposure to all of like the Sam Harris's and the Richard Dawkins and the, you know, the Bill Maher's and the Neil deGrasse Tyson's to say like, okay, these guys actually aren't asking the right questions. And
the religious people.
No, like the atheists aren't asking the right questions to the religious people. They're like,
okay,
I don't know. It works on a comedy setting or whatever. Like, I can still like watch Ricky Gervais stand up, which is just like all about atheists and bashing Christians, and I can still kind of laugh at it. But at the same time, it's because I can't take them seriously anymore, because like they're talking about like silly things. And when we talk about in our Holy Bible book club series, like, oh, they're just talking about how they got pi wrong in the Bible, so they're definitely not mathematicians back in the day or whatever, like stupid little jokes like that. It's like, that's not even a little bit of what the story is about, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, I've also been thinking a lot about like why the Bible is a thing. And I was watching some interviews and some like speeches by Neil Gaiman, my favorite writer of all time.
And he's a sci-fi writer, right?
Among other things as well. He does sci-fi. Okay. He did a book on Norse mythology from the perspective of Loki called Norse Mythology. He wrote the Sandman series, the comics.
Okay. And,
he did American Gods. He did The Ocean at the End of the Lane, one of my personal favorites. Good Omens with Terry Pratchett.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I know Good Omens.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman is definitely
he's all over the place.
He's top of the hierarchy for me, dude. He's my number one. But I was watching a speech that he did on how stories last. And he brought up this really, I think, relevant analogy where, like, in modern day, they were, like, trying to discover a way to store nuclear waste, right? So he describes this scenario where, like, the half-life of nuclear waste is 10,000 years. We don't have anything that's 10,000 years old at all, period. Nothing to say that the human record of, like, our intellectual ability goes back that far. There's nothing. So
maybe some of the pyramids, but that's a tangent.
Exactly. That we can definitely get into that later. I'm definitely down. But there's no, like, written, like, warnings or something like that, right? There's no, like, we haven't found a door that says, like, dead inside, keep out, or anything like that, right? And if we did, we wouldn't be able to understand it at all, because, you know, English as a language, since its conception, has changed drastically. Like, since Shakespeare, English is almost unrecognizable. A lot of people need translators in their books of Shakespeare, and that's the same language. Going back 2,000 years, what did Hebrew look like? And before that, what did, like, everything else look like?
What, Sumerian.
What did they sound like when they were writing in cuneiform? Like, what does that actually mean to us? How do you read that? You effectively can't. So then you, like, explore the option of, like, using hieroglyphs or symbology, and you can use, like, a skull. We all recognize that as poisonous. You know, this is nuclear waste. It's poison. Keep out. And it's just like, no, that kind of wouldn't work, because a generation could come along and say, oh, that means pirate treasure. We're going to get rich if we enter here. Or you could just write single words like wicked or de bomb is the example that he uses. But then a generation could come along and say, like, oh, there's much cool stuff in there.
Yeah, I mean, I would think even if it said death inside, somebody would just start curiosity. Would say, we've got to get a camera in there. Let's just poke a little hole.
Yeah, exactly. Because ghost stories, right? Like, these are all things that, like, nobody actually believes ghost stories. So you have to create, you know, a true story. Like, he also drives home the point that a story is a lie and a story is true. Those are two things that exist at the same time. Like, you could read a story. The best example is, like, when you're reading Shakespeare, and Neil Gaiman actually wrote a comic about this, and, like, I think it was A Midsummer Night's Dream. He did a comic adaptation in Sandman where, like, a bunch of, like fairies and pixies were, like, putting on this play or whatever, but, like, one of the lines was, I know all of these events have never come to pass, and yet I know it is more true than my day-to-day life. I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my soul, like, that kind of feeling. Like, when you're reading a story that really fully immerses you into the tale and changes who you are. Like, if you're Ebenezer Scrooge and you have a dream of the three ghosts of Christmas visiting you during the night, and you wake up a changed man. Like, that story will have an effect on you. So that's really the only way to, you know, project a warning with actual effectiveness. Because if you write anything down or just, like, try to make people believe that this is going to kill you if you enter it, that's not enough. You need, like, a full mythology built around it. So you would need to create, like, a series of stories that convinced the population to think that, okay, this is going to kill us if we enter it. They don't have to know that it's nuclear waste with a half-life of 10,000 years. In fact, it's better if they don't know that. It's better if they think it's a demon. It's better if they think it's, like, a closed off gate to the underworld for the local population to be absolutely terrified of, because if they understand it, then there's more to be understood. There's no supernatural aspect to it. They can explore it, but it can only end in a detriment. It can only end in death or sickness and the release of more toxic waste. So when they talk about that, it makes me think, why do we have the Bible? What's its purpose? And if it's a warning, like, you know, the mythology of the 10,000 year nuclear waste, what is it warning us against? So I don't know if any of that came through as good as I have it stacked up into my head, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, like, bringing it back to the Bible and thinking of it in the terms of a tale, but also a truth that people find.
Right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, like, the whole story of the Bible, like, taken in totality, you know, is it considered a tragedy, or what kind of tale is it? Like a comic tragedy, or just a drama, or, like, you're implying some kind of warning woven into it.
I think that's kind of the, like, conclusion that I'm reaching, is that the Bible predates, like, drama and comedy, because it exists for, I don't know, it exists for a deeper purpose than to just entertain us, I was going to say, but I think that's a pretty important purpose too. But, like, I don't know, you could take it from any story. Like, you could read Amazing Fantasy 15, the first appearance of Spider-Man, and, like, the lesson of with great power comes great responsibility could change your life forever. But, you know, Peter Parker was never a wrestler. He never actually lived. He never let his uncle die. But that sequence, like, there's truth to that. There's it not only could it happen, like, it's an example of evil does happen when you just let them get away with it.
Would it be fair to call some story like that that's greater than a drama for entertainment, like a legend? Like a legendary story or something?
Perhaps. I don't know. It's hard to play with the definitions of mythology and legend and story, because it all kind of crosses over like a Venn diagram kind of thing.
Yeah, earlier when you were talking about how do we even understand and decipher those ancient languages, it reminded me of that John Marco Allegro book, The Mushroom and the Cross, because he has like a whole introductory chapter about like the root meanings of words and where they come from, their origins, and why we use them, and how close they are together. And I think he mentioned that a lot of the words that are written down are almost like pictograms or pictures for symbols for ideas, and that the spoken language must have been much different than what was written down.
Right. Yeah, I think it's hard for us with, you know, I only speak like one language and a teeny tiny little bit of French, and I've been dabbling in some other research and into like etymology and the origin of words and that, but yeah, it's really hard to understand it when you get into like different full alphabets, and then you have different languages that are structured on alphabets that aren't even really alphabets. Like, how does Chinese work? I mean, like, if you don't know the word for something, you just don't know the word for something. There's no like sounding it out phonetically, right?
Yeah, language is as a whole is crazy. Like, how we created all these words for things.
Yeah, and then it's like, We have our relationship with language and the written version of language. And, most of our society is literate. We teach all of our kids in school to, think in words and how to spell your thoughts, but that's definitely not how it's always worked in the past. So I think we take for granted that, like, only a few people were reading this. And I know when I take notes for myself, I definitely don't write it out in prose and in paragraph form. It's just like a little bullet note, another little bullet note, a single word or two, another bullet note.
Underline this.
Yeah, underline, highlight, and
I'll say it just like they said it.
yeah, I'm just going to copy this down exactly so I know I don't get it wrong, and there. But, like,
Yep.
how were they really interacting with that medium? Because, as Marshall McLuhan always tells us, the medium is the message. So, what was the psychotechnology of the written word back in the day when only a small percentage of the population had a relationship with the written word?
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to understand the perspective of somebody living back then, but you get a little glimpse with the things like the Bible and the Iliad.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely true that only a small people, like maybe the priests, would be the writers of these languages.
Yeah, like when we're
And
going through
even
the.
today, not everybody can write,
Yeah.
but it reminds me of something like Terence McKenna would say, like about how our purpose almost is to generate words for things. Like so our DNA, it churns out proteins, and then us as like a whole organism, we just churn out these words, like invisible sounds. And they have meaning. They're like, they have weight to them, and that you can create things with your words by describing to somebody else maybe how to do something. You could tell somebody how to cook a meal, for example. Gather these ingredients and put them in the pot and create something.
Then you can put that in a book about hobbits.
Yeah, I mean, you could do all these things if you were mute, but I think it would just be different.
Yeah, whoever says magic isn't real has never studied language, man. Like, how is
Yeah,
that not
language.
magic?
Yeah, I could see language being described as a form of magic. I mean, most stories of magic involve some kind of incantation and spell, speaking the right word.
From abracadabra to please and thank you.
Yeah, the power of please and thank you.
Yeah. Like, if you don't think those words actually have power, or I'm sorry, or I appreciate you, come on. Those words are magic right there. You can change a life with those words. You're telling me that's not magic? Like, there's a reason that the Bible puts so much focus on, like, the scribes and, like, the prophets. It's like, well, those are the guys that knew how to write. Those were a big deal. That's an important, like, position to have filled. A guy that can read and write, that's important. They have, like, a permanent hard copy of memory.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why we have a whole set of people, a whole class of people nowadays that are, are designated readers and writers. We call them lawyers and
Yeah.
judges. They have to go to school and get like a license to practice reading and writing, essentially.
Yeah, there's
So
some
I'm
other stuff about that live chat too. You got some of your super chats answered.
Yeah, I forget what my first super chat was, though.
All I remember was he didn't answer it right away. He's just like, "Oh, perfect. I'll answer this right as soon as I'm done." And then he kept going.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions I had asked him, like, is it considered a sin to like not have kids? Because in the Bible, it talks about like being full and multiplying. And I don't know, there's something about like if you don't have a kid that feels like you're maybe going against the stream of nature. And like you're resisting something in a way, like
Yeah, resisting
resisting
like
a
the
deep
natural flow.
calling. Yeah, still going with the flow, but there's something to be said there about not like having your flower blossom or something. I don't know if that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a attitude where it's like if you don't have kids, then you're not reaching your potential. But yeah, I don't
Well, I
know.
liked what he said about them not kids not being for everyone necessarily, but they are a blessing. And I totally get that. Like when I see my nieces and nephews, yeah, they're a blessing to, laugh with and have fun. And
Yeah, and it's a blessing to the
being,
whole family and all the family friends, and everybody gets to be a part of it, you know? It's like,
it's hard for the parents, I'm sure. But like
yeah.
being an aunt or uncle, there's a certain easiness to
Yeah, definitely. Shout out to
that.
all the moms out there.
For real. But yeah, honestly, I forgot what my first super chat question was.
Me too. I was too swallowed up in the conversation. I got in a fight with the mod too at one point. I'm trying to remember what
Something
that was
about
about.
communism
Oh
and
yeah.
atheists or communists and
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Christians.
I'm not sure if he just like misspoke for a moment or I just like misread something for a moment, but it sounded like he was equating communism to atheism. And I had to just be like,
Right.
okay, all right. Let's go. But that's kind of crazy. But like, I don't know. It doesn't hold water to me at all. Their only argument seems to be like, well, Stalin was an atheist. Mao was an atheist. Well, Hitler believed in the Norse pantheon, so he also believed in aliens. If you're saying Hitler was an atheist, I think you've missed the point. He definitely wasn't a Christian. He was all about that, like will to power thing, the whole misunderstood will to power thing. But
Could he be called like a Gnostic even?
I think he'd be closer to Gnostic than Christian for sure. But
Yeah.
yeah, maybe some kind of a weird blend between Gnosticism and like the Norse gods. Like, I'm pretty sure he had some kind of a relationship with Thor. That's
Yeah.
maybe Ares, maybe some other gods of war. I'm not sure. It's really hard to say though. And then like the biggest like communist's biggest hater is Ayn Rand, I would say, and she's as atheist as they come. She despised religion in all forms, and the only thing she hated more was communism. So to say like atheism is some kind of a stepping stone to, being a communist, you'd have to say it's a stepping stone to being an Ayn Rand objectivist too. It's an argument that doesn't really hold water.
So I was trying to get into Ayn Rand, does she, but I didn't get very far, but does she believe that like there shouldn't be regulatory, like governmental regulatory bodies and stuff?
No. She believes in government, but like she doesn't believe in taxes. She believes in like, I don't know. It's really hard. I wish Will was here to have this conversation. But
Yeah,
like,
because I get really confused with like what an objectivist means in a practical
yeah.
sense.
Like when I first started getting into Ayn Rand, it was through like the YouTube libertarian kind of movement. So like a lot of people kind of understand Ayn Rand through that lens, but there's really more to it than that. If you're an objectivist, you're not really a libertarian, because like if you're a capital L libertarian, as far as I understand, you don't believe in governments or governing bodies. But an objectivist would say that you kind of need a governing body, but as soon as they start overreaching or they're unable to sustain themselves or people stop taking them seriously, they're done, and you need to replace that with a new governing body. So like I think it definitely it's capitalism, but it's not really like laissez-faire free trade capitalism. But she is a big on free trade. She just thinks that everything should be kind of, if you can't make it on your own merits, then you shouldn't have like any worth. Like you should be able to earn everything that you earn. I think that's part of her main philosophy. I'm not sure. I haven't got it down really yet. I've just read Atlas Shrugged and a few like interviews and stuff online, but
So like what about like artists? Like they make paintings and stuff.
yeah.
Would she's all right with like people making non-practical things? And I'd say that really loosely.
Well,
Like
she w
non-consumable things.
you're talking about like postmodernist art and stuff like that, or are you just talking about
Yeah.
art in general, like a book? Because Ayn Rand herself was an artist. She made her
That.
livelihood off of writing. She married an artist who made his livelihood off of painting. So, you know, if you're an objectivist, you see an artist who's creating their own value as someone who's creating their own value through their mind. Like, it's all in the mind. You create everything with the mind. The communists were all about the workers, and you do everything with the body, and it's just like, oh, body, mind dumb. Yeah. But Ayn Rand was like, no, you forsake your mind, you forsake your life. If you give all of your worth to labor, you're not gonna, that's not self-sustaining. You need to use your noggin, use your intellectual, you know, powers, and create something that is worth money, worth value to other people, and you can sustain each other through a community. Because in Atlas Shrugged, like her solution isn't to just, like when the commies take over, her solution isn't to just abolish the government. It's to take the brightest minds and the best people and go and do their own thing. They hide themselves off in the Rockies and they create their own civilization. So, and it's not that that civilization doesn't have a government, it's just that the government is like supported by the people, and the government supports the people. Like it doesn't have to be that big if everyone's values are on the same level. If everyone respects each other and agrees on what their role is in society, then there's no need for government to step in and say like, oh, well, you're actually not pulling your weight. You owe us money. You're actually making too much money. You should be giving up money. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're just another guy in the community like us. You think you can just take money out of my pocket just because I'm the most valuable person and you think you're the governing body here? No, that's not how this works. So like it has to be built on like respect and fairness, but I don't know what Ayn Rand would say the solution is for, you know, us right now, like what kind of system we have, how do we preserve what's good, how do we change what's bad, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like you know quite a bit more than I do
about it. If Will was here, he'd be able to talk your ear off, trust me. He's read more than me. So I think we're going to get into the Fountainhead at some point and go back down the rabbit hole.
Right on. So what else is going on in the world today? Akira still in Mexico?
Yeah, Akira the Don, still in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
I was watching his live stream last Friday.
Didn't he have to go down there due to some kind of tax reasons, or yeah, like we were just talking about?
He was in America from the UK on a visa. So that visa expired, I think. Some shady stuff went down and didn't get renewed on time. I'm sure COVID was a factor in delaying, so I guess they deported him and he went to Mexico.
Oh, dang.
But yeah, I guess they're like happy down there for the time being. I was watching his last live stream and he's just like, Hercules just came in here. There's a flying cockroach. God damn it. Didn't even know those guys could fly.
Yeah, I wonder, when you say he got deported, like, I'm imagining that someone's showing up and arresting him. I wonder, like, how all that went down.
Yeah, I don't know any of the details. I think I'm in the same boat as you. I just woke up one day and like, what, Akira's in Mexico?
Yeah.
He was on, they were talking about him on, what's his name? One of the late night guys on Fox, not late night, but like one of those talk shows. It's like Gutfeld. Does that sound right? I don't know. I don't really watch Fox that much.
Yeah, it didn't ring a bell.
I'm Canadian, so. But yeah, I saw the little segment. You can find it on Akira's YouTube channel, where it's just like.
Where they were talking about him.
Yeah, Scott Adams was on the show for like a little 5-minute segment. And they were talking about the new Scott album, the Scott Adams album. So it's just like, he released Basket Case Theory, and then a week later, Scott Adams was talking about Basket Case Theory on national television, Fox News. So it's like, Meaning Wave exists, people. We're doing it live. It's true. Meaning Wave For exists. Real.
So what's up new with me? I bought a motorcycle and I named That's it right. Falcor.
Falcor? That's metal as shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been having fun on it. I got a really good deal on Craigslist and, you know, fought off the other buyers.
Nice.
Gets brutal.
Yeah, I guess.
Like 100, if you put something up for sale, like, you know, 100 people end up calling you. And like 75% of them are like scammers. You gotta weed them out. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know if you've ever sold anything on Craigslist, but usually you get calls by scammers.
I've not really sold stuff online. I've bought stuff on like Kijiji before. Do you have Kijiji in America? I guess
it sounds familiar, but I haven't used it.
Okay. Well, it's basically Craigslist. It's like just look up your local Kijiji and then, people selling
that
stuff.
You look real up... like Middle Eastern.
Yeah, it's like there's a section for like car stuff. There's a section for like comics. There's a section for like collectibles and, you know, books, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
all kinds of stuff. And you look at the free things, and you look at the you look at everybody's clean fill in their backyard and their old lumber that's been there for 2 years. That's for free. Yeah. Anybody who wants it.
Yeah, I had been checking like Craigslist like pretty much regularly, looking at the bikes, and then like the prices had been going up, and then all of a sudden I had a work trip that got canceled because of a tropical storm. And so I happened to be home and I was doing that, just browsing. Boom, I see this motorcycle and I'm like, that's a good price. And we talked to this guy, and we made a deal.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, do you have it yet, or is it just like.
Yeah, it's parked in my driveway.
Nice. Tight.
Yeah, I've been driving it around the lake, go pick up barbecue or something. And
That's awesome.
yeah, I had already like I already had all the riding gear, like boots and a helmet, leather
Right.
jacket, because I had been renting bikes, but it's kind of expensive to do that.
Yeah, it's probably the same with renting cars or anything else, I'd imagine. It's about the
Yeah, I
same as
mean,
owning it.
you're like maybe drop 200 or 300 bucks over the weekend to rent a motorcycle, and then you don't have to worry about maintenance, but you are on the hook for like if you damage it, you got a deductible to pay, probably drop lose $1,000 if you scratch the bike.
Yeah, plus
So that
gasoline,
was,
plus any chip in the
yeah,
paint.
that was always in the back of my head, like, oh, I can't hurt this bike, it's not mine. And so this one, like the insurance is $80 for a year, and it gets like 75 miles per gallon. Pretty sweet.
That's pretty good, actually, yeah.
It's like a 500 cc engine, so I can't get in too much trouble with it.
It rips, but it doesn't rip too hard. Yeah,
Yeah, exactly. I don't think I could do a wheelie in it. And I won't be going like over 100 miles an hour.
what was the one that you rented again?
In the past, I had rented a Ducati Monster 821 and a Honda CBR1000RR. That thing rips so hard. Like, ideally, there's a certain like level of fun having that much power, like at the twist of your wrist, but also it's dangerous. Like, because a
Yeah, no
bike
doubt.
like a 1000 cc bike wants to go 115, like with no thing, like it just wants to hang there all day.
Yeah. And of course, I'm Canadian, so I have to like translate that. That's like 145 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, that's like upwards of 200 kilometers an hour. Those big bikes just want to go fast, which is a blast. Until you have to turn. But they also have really good brakes. And I don't know. I know what I'm doing and I know what I can do, so I feel pretty safe on it. It's a bit of a dream. Like, I always wanted to be a fighter pilot. So, this is about as close as I can get to that. As close as I can get to being Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Got a fighter pilot on the ground. Be a road pilot. Like Mad Max. Just mount a couple machine guns on there, you're halfway there.
Yeah, like I don't know if it's legal to like mount a shotgun on my bike, like in like a Terminator 2 style with like the little
Oh
leather
yeah.
holster.
Dude, that'd be sick.
It's like a sport bike, so it looks different. I don't know. I need like a katana, like from Kill Bill.
Well, I can tell you that's definitely not legal up here. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is Texas.
You can get away with lots of things in Texas. Just not smoking weed.
Nope. Nope. No, Sober October is coming up.
Oh, jeez.
Are you going to stop smoking weed for
I don't know if I can.
that?
I like it too much. It's too helpful.
Yeah, I'm not really looking forward to it, but whatever.
Man, it's fucking hard. I'm addicted, bro. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've never done a sober October. Like, I didn't have a drink of alcohol or.
Yeah, I did like a couple years ago. I did a thing where it's like kind of like a sober October, just without the sober stuff. We did like the workout stuff. Like we were like watching Joe Rogan and stuff. We're just like, you know, we could work out, see who does the best for the month. Like one guy dropped out right away and
Yeah.
yeah.
I think you're supposed to like substitute all the stuff you would take, like cigarettes or alcohol, beer, whatever, weed, and put exercise or something different in its place.
Yeah, but it's then like when you get like a really good workout, and it's just like, oh, you know what I need after a great workout like that? A nice joint.
Yeah, have you ever used any of the CBD stuff?
A little bit. I've been like, I've been smoking like less potent strains lately, so I've been like cutting back. But just not like quitting anything like that. But
Yeah.
it's I smoke a lot more sativa now and a lot less indica. It's like if I ever have indica these days, it's like to get to sleep and that's it. So
You notice a big difference if switching.
yeah. Not really. It's just like, well, I'm not getting like stoned during the day. I get high during the day, just not stoned. It's like there's a difference between the two. Like one, like puts you in the couch and you're useless for the rest of the day, and the other one, it's like, okay, I could actually get some writing done. I'm not completely useless.
Yeah, I remember back when I was like 17 or something, one of the first times I had ever smoked, I got some stuff off a coworker of mine, and it was Maui Wowie. I took like, I smoked a bowl of that in the forest, and I could not move. I was literally stone still. I just like, I can't walk.
Oh, to be young again.
Oh man, have you been recording this, Scott?
I have been.
Right
Probably.
on. Maybe you should tell anybody listening where they can find our stuff
Oh yeah, that's
in case they're interested.
that would be a bookwave.club on the World Wide Web. Can look up Bookwave on Anchor, Spotify. What are the other ones? Stitcher, Google Play, Apple. All not Google Play, Google Podcast.
Can people find us on YouTube?
Yeah, they sure can.
No way.
The channel's called Bookwave, matter of fact. Space between all the letters. Yeah, we're the channel with only like 130 something subscribers, so we're easy to find. Oh, jeez. Shout outs to Paul Vanderclay, the topic of the early half of our conversation. We're reading Psalms soon in the book club podcast. But yeah.
Yeah, we're reading Psalms in the Bible. Check it out.
Reading Psalms, and we're also finishing up Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. So
Oh
hopefully we'll
yeah,
get
neat.
some guest appearances to talk about the Bible. But till next time, may the force be with you.
Four equal to mass times acceleration.